Our first speaker is Yolanda Davila, and she's from the School of Nursing, University of Texas Medical Branch at Galveston. She's a distinguished teaching professor and holder of the Odelia Brown McCarrolly Professorship of Nursing at the University of Texas Medical Branch at Galveston. Dr. Davila has a 20-plus year history of institutional and federal-funded intimate partner violence prevention research with a primary focus on English and Spanish-speaking Latino women. Her work has been disseminated through peer review, publications, and national and international conference presentations. Our second speaker will be Lorraine Bacchus, and she will present Exploring the Ethical and Social Aspects of an mHealth Intervention in Urban and Rural Health Home Visitation Programs for Women Affected by Domestic Violence. She conducts mixed methods social epidemiology with a background in evaluation of complex interventions and health systems research. She's been the principal investigator on studies evaluating domestic violence interventions in maternity, sexual health, general practice settings, as well as community-based settings in Europe and in the United States. She is currently a Marie Curie International Fellow funded by the European Commission. Our third speaker, or third speakers, are Melissa Sutherland and Heidi Collins Fantasia. Melissa is an assistant professor at the William F. Connell School of Nursing in Boston College. She received her PhD from the University of Virginia and her master's and bachelor's degree from Binghamton University. Her research focuses on the intersection of interpersonal violence and sexual health among women. She's a family nurse practitioner and teaches community health, population health at both the undergraduate and graduate levels at Boston College. Her co-author, Dr. Fantasia, is an assistant professor in the School of Nursing at the University of Massachusetts at Lowell, and she's a women's health nurse practitioner. Our final speaker is Dr. Erica Slowin. She teaches community health to baccalaureate student nurses at James Madison University in Harrisonburg, Virginia. She received a BA in violin performance, an MSN in community health nursing from the University of Texas at Austin, and a PhD in nursing from the University of Virginia. Beginning in January, she and her family will spend 7 months, I'm not even going to try, in India, where she will teach nursing and public health students through a Fulbright Nehru Award. We will hold all our questions until the end of all of them, so if you have a burning question, write it down so you'll remember it, and we'll get on with the program and they'll go from one to the other. Thank you.
Good afternoon, and thank you for attending the late session and for hanging in there with us. I'm Yolanda, and I'm presenting a conceptual framework that my research colleagues and I have been working on. We have no disclosures. And just to give you a little bit of background on intimate partner violence, for this presentation we're using the CDC definition of it being physical, sexual, psychological violence against one partner by a former or current intimate partner. And again, for our purposes, it's violence against women by their male partners. It is a public health issue and has been for at least 40 years in terms of its prevalence and its incidence. The last national survey that I could find was the 2010 National Intimate Partner and Sexual Violence Survey, where it was reported that one quarter of women in the United States, adult women, report the experience of violence by a male partner, be it physical, sexual, or stalking. And it is very costly in terms of finances, in terms of community resources and individual resources as well. The cost goes anywhere from $6 to $8 billion per year, depending on which source you're looking at. But they all are fairly in agreement that about $4.1 billion go to direct health care costs in treating violence. You know, as I said, we've talked about violence, or we've been researching it for about the past 40 years. And what we're seeing is that it's usually approached from one theoretical perspective, sociocultural, feminist theory, and social learning theory being the ones that are most commonly used. The problem with these has been that there's mixed empirical evidence in the research findings that reported on a single theory. And they also come from a perspective that also promote women as victims of choice, saying that if they chose to leave, they could, and that's not necessarily true, especially for those of you that are in the field of violence prevention. More currently, we're looking at research that suggests that women are neither helpless nor passive, that they do use a variety of prevention strategies to protect themselves and their families. And looking at the literature, we've come to realize that if intimate partner violence is a very multifaceted, then so is the prevention efforts to prevent or to reduce it. And we really need to understand it or to come from it in terms of prevention from women's strengths and their abilities and what they can do. And again, like any kind of theory, it does need to be able to be theory tested, and it needs to be able to adequately describe, explain, or predict a behavior or an outcome. So my colleagues and I have gone through an extensive review of the extant literature. We've also used our own personal, our own previous research findings and our own clinical practice experiences. And we've come up with a proposed conceptual framework that I'm presenting today. We looked at the different concepts, and what we've come up with is coercive power, relationship power, IPV prevention strategies, ecological and social learning theory with self-efficacy as the underpinnings to our model. Let me just go back. I'm sorry. Let's see if I can do this. Page up. Okay. So let me just talk about coercive controlling power. Power is the ability to influence the behavior of another. Okay. And coercive controlling power, which is not on here. Which one do I want? I'm sorry. I am lost. Okay. We'll use this one. Coercive controlling power, and as I talked about, power is the ability to influence the behavior of another. For our purposes, we use coercive or coercive controlling, whichever literature that you were quoting. But basically, it is the most common type of power that's used or encountered by healthcare, social service, and law enforcement, with men having more power than women in relationships. We also use relationship power, which is a different set of power that occurs within an intimate relationship. It's the ability to act or behave in a manner that is not congruent with a partner's wishes. Okay? And again, women usually have less power in the relationships as well as, than their male partners. The second core concept that we have come up with is women's IPV prevention strategies. And going through the literature, we found that they kind of are categorized into three different broad categories. One is coping and health-seeking behaviors using formal and informal resources, and health-seeking behaviors that are done privately or publicly. Emotion-focused is more of a woman's reaction or reactive behaviors to the violence. It may be in terms of their feeling fearful and crying, or perhaps trying to anticipate their partner's needs so there isn't any kind of anger, or to de-escalate the anger that the partner is feeling and his use of violence. Problem-focused strategies are where women are more proactive in the behaviors that they use to prevent violence. For example, maybe removing themselves from a room where the partner is under the influence of alcohol or something. So before the argument escalates more, they actually remove themselves. Okay, when you look in help-seeking behaviors, you can see the formal, and that's more where the woman reaches out to community resources and agency, maybe their healthcare providers, social services, maybe the police or the legal system. Informal, again, is where they reach out for their friends or their families, maybe looking for assistance, staying with someone for the night. In terms of private, again, this, and I talk about anticipating a partner's needs, but these are intrinsic. These are what women initiate by themselves, okay? They don't need the assistance of anyone else. And then there's the public where they actually do reach out, for example, calling 911. So you can see by all these definitions, there's kind of confusion about what exactly is the intimate partner violence prevention strategy. Where does it fall in this continuum? So for our purposes, we use the Women's Eye Prevention Strategies Index. It was developed by Dr. Goodman in about 2004 or 5. And what she has done is she had categorized the behaviors in terms of the purpose of the behavior as well as the level or the involvement of others, okay? So self would be the woman's self-initiation. Others would be assistance of someone else reaching out. You can see the 6 categories here, and they've kind of meshed with the ones that I talked to about before that in the other one about the coping and the emotion-seeking behaviors. We have resistance where they want to change the partner's behavior through confrontation, so like physically fighting back, woman initiated. Placating, which is changing their behaviors, but not through confrontational methods, okay? Keeping things quiet for him, trying to anticipate his needs, taking the children somewhere else so the level of quiet or anxiety in the house goes down. Again, it's self-directed by the women. Safety planning is actually increasing women's resources and options to prevent or escape the violence. This can be either self, and I should have put others, because I don't know how many of you work in community agencies, but that's one of the things that they teach women is safety planning, what to do before, during, and after the violence to keep themselves safe. So in that way, it is with the help of others. But if the women go home and use them, it's self-initiated. There's legal. This is help-seeking behaviors from anyone that is in the legal system. Think in terms of what do you call those? Restraining orders, filing for custody or for divorce. It's the legal system. Formal networking is external resources such as your battered women's shelter or the police or a healthcare provider that they reach out to. And informal, again, is looking at the family and friends. And you can see that the last ones that I mentioned are with the assistance of others. Women need them to help them to implement these behaviors. The underpinnings to our model are the social ecological model, as well as social learning theory and self-efficacy, which is the next slide. But I'm sure that many of you in public health are familiar with the SEM by Brontenbrenner. The individual is the innermost level, and these levels are nested and but yet interrelated. There's open between the different levels of influence coming in and going out. So the individual is the woman's biodemographic factors such as age, ethnicity, gender, and mood. And researching in the literature will tell you that these are associated with violence. For example, depression as a mood state, the women's cognitive impairment, they aren't able to think in terms of escape or putting in a safety plan. And depression, again, is associated with violence. The mesosystem is more in terms of people's or women's partners, their friends, their families, their co-workers. It is their norms and behaviors that influence women. For example, one of those would be perhaps a partner that's under the influence in his behavior, and perhaps he's being very argumentative. Okay, so that's influencing the woman as well from a different level. Exosystems are the neighborhoods and the communities in which women live and work and play and do all those other things and interact with. And again, if you go to the literature, it'll show you that neighborhoods with high crime rates and high poverty rates usually have an associated high rate of IPV against women. And the macro system, again, are our basic social cultural norms. Think in terms of the entertainment we have today. And how women are very often objectified and violence against them seems to appear to be a norm. I mean, you see that very often. So these influence the behaviors of women and the factors that influence the violence against them. Talked a little bit about social learning theory, and you can see that there's an overlap between this and the SEM model. We have the person, which is again at one of the levels, looking in terms of cognitive, affective, and biological factors. We use, and I'll show that in one more model, is the cognitive, where we're looking at relationship power and self-efficacy of the women. The environment, like SEM, is talking about the environment outside of the women, talking about their partners, their family, their communities, society at large. We have women's behaviors, and here in our model, we see those as the prevention behaviors that women use, the resistance, the placating, safety planning, legal, informal, and formal networking. You can see that there are outcomes, again, social learning theory says that you use a certain behavior or you initiate a certain action with an anticipated outcome. For us, this would be women's use of strategies to prevent violence. And again, there is the self-efficacy, women's confidence, and their ability to actually initiate these behaviors. And there is a negative and a positive and negative feedback mechanism, again, a loop mechanism. I'm sorry, guys, it's been a long day. Forgive me. But, you know, and social learning theories tells you that if you implement or use a certain behavior and it gives you the expected outcome that you want, you're going to use it again. Same thing, if you use a behavior and you don't get what you want or the reaction, the outcome that you wanted, you're less likely to use it. So this kind of puts the background to where we are in this model that is currently in process, okay? Don't have any data for you yet, but I hope to have it for next year. You can see where we have integrated the SEM model as well as social learning theory and self-efficacy. The different levels, again, too, that influence women's, the violence against women. Biodemographics, we consider age, personal income, educational level, all those things. Internal factors are a specific subset of the biodemographics that we use. We're looking again at relationship power and self-efficacy, and we're postulating that there is an interaction between the two. And I think that makes sense. You have to have the power as well as the ability and the confidence to initiate these behaviors, which is the IPV prevention strategies as defined by Goodman. If they use those strategies, and we are hoping that they do not experience violence, if they're effective, or they might have violence as well, too. That is our expected outcomes. Women use these strategies. They either assist or are helpful in preventing the violence or not. And what we've added to, which is a bit different, is seeing how the women perceive their own behaviors or actions. If I use this strategy of placating, and they're not going to call it that, they're going to call it something else, was it helpful or not? And we want to see if the behavior is helpful, do they continue to use it? If it's not effective, do they continue to use it? And unfortunately, we've had a little bit of preliminary data coming in, and the more helpful behaviors, as identified by Goodman, which are like the illegal and the formal networking, safety planning, are not the most often used. They're the most commonly used, but not the most frequently used. So as we get larger numbers, hopefully that will change. If not, that means we need to rethink this as well as what we're actually doing at this point in time. So just an idea for the summary and recommendations, since right now I don't have any real data to present to you, is in terms of future research especially. I think this model does have a potential in the field of violence prevention as it comes from the perspective of women themselves. They best know their strengths and their abilities and their circumstances. It does need to have a large random sample of culturally diverse women because they might not be the same across ethnicities. Okay. In terms of practice, we really need to look at the larger picture of what is going on in a woman's life and what's actually influencing or contributing to her experience of violence. And according to SEM, the more levels of influence that you target for intervention, the more effective and longer lasting is that effect. So we'd like for clinicians to take a look and not perhaps just look in terms of the woman, but what else in the surrounding that they can assist her with. And that goes for, again, referral perhaps or assistance in some manner. And for policy, I know that Jayco says that certain institutions or healthcare institutions need to assess for violence. That's not always the case that I'm finding when I'm up and around a lot of the times. And I don't blame healthcare providers at all. I'm one. And when you have the 15-minute hour, as we call it in psych, you're targeting the main concern, okay? And whether it is identified or it is suspected to be abuse, sometimes you just don't have the time to do that. You take care of the most predominant need. So I would like, to, in terms of that, to have some kind of policy that actually does recommend it or require it, that it be followed up with as well, to make sure that it is implemented. And part of that, again, for any woman, is not just the immediate treatment, but also the referral and the resources that she needs to live a very healthy and safe lifestyle. So that's all that I have. Thank you.